All right, everybody, welcome to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Philip Drew, administrator. And our first guest today is Ellen Mariani. She has recently filed a RICO lawsuit against the President of the United States and others for allegedly allowing the September 11th attacks to happen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phil. Philip.
So, I guess you're a widow from the September 11th attack, correct? Your husband died on one of the hijacked airplanes?
Yes, he did.
And it was flight number 175, right?
It was 175. We were going on our way to my daughter's wedding, and I actually was ahead of him 2 hours. I left at 6, he left at 8. And, of course, he never made it, and I had to give my own daughter away. It's kind of sad.
Yeah,
what we're looking for right now is answers from the 9/11 Commission in Washington, and I just was told this morning that they are canceling two of the meetings for February, and I'm a little uptight over that and want to know the reasons why they're, and then why our president has never turned over any briefings.
Yeah, you sound pretty suspicious. What is it that made you start on this path of, I mean, apparently the majority of the families have taken the money and
and
they're not upset, and you seem to really be going after him here. What's the difference?
Let's erase the word of suspicious. I mean, that's very insulting for those that have lost their loved ones. First of all, I am not a young person with little children. You cannot fool me. We have, or supposed to have had, the most sophisticated and the strongest government and security in the world. And, excuse me, what happened? Yes, I am looking into this very closely because something's not right here.
Well, you know, critics would say that, you know, when people go through personal tragedy like you have, that...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess probably the first thing they say is, you know, you can't sue to bring your husband back. It's never going to
bring him back. No, we understand that. You're not talking to a kid. Anybody is not talking to me as a child. I understand all about when somebody disappears and they've exploded in a ball of fire, and wanting the truth is not the same thing as bringing somebody back. No, you cannot bring him back. But I'll be damned if I'm going to sit here and believe everything that is being told to us, where they're blocking real truth and information, even, you know, to the commissioner here, you know, in Washington. You know, come on, we're not dumb, all of us. None of us really are dumb. We're just naive, or some are. A lot of these families are medicated, and they still are. No, I'm not. No, I'm not going to believe everything till you've shown it to us all in the public.
All right, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do now. I'm going to go ahead and change lines and get your lawyer on the phone here, and we're going to go through this case and see exactly what the evidence is.
Right. Philip, I want to say one thing, that I do have an open letter to the President of the United States, and anybody can read it on our website. Okay, it's 911forthetruth.com. And it, in my open letter, it says, I am neither or Republic or a Democrat. I'm not here to bash the government or disrespect anybody, but I want the truth. And the only way we're going to get the truth is demand it now, before it ever happens again. I mean, a lot of our rights are gone, and they got away with it. And if people would just take a little time to, you know, really research, they're going to find out this is not new, what happened. A lot of things in the past, in the 60s, 1962, they've just released a lot of things that were, you couldn't see any of these things before in Operation Northwood. I would love people to go to their websites and just look at that and then just compare. Could it be now? Could it have been a repeat of years back? And I also want to tell them out there that are listening that I'm not here to bash, or I'm not a hungry widow. I live on Social Security, and I think these dead people deserve respect and honor. And that is the only way, because you know what, Philip, when I was in New York, I talked to a fireman. And I said, what do you remember the most about the 9/11 disaster? And you know what he said to me, Philip?
What?
The thousands of empty shoes that were all burnt and charred at the bottom of the towers. That those people that morning had walked to their jobs and they were no more. So as far as sitting here grieving and taking out, you know, my hurt or whatever on our government, that's not true, honey. I want the truth. I don't want it to ever happen to our children and their children. And I just don't want people to just say, oh, well, it's over. Yes, his pain is over. Ours is still there. Our hearts are still broken. Until we get our confidence back and know what happened in our country, we will not have the respect that we did have for our government. And that's how I feel.
Very good. I'm glad that you got an opportunity to say that, because I know people immediately will think of that you just want the money or that you have psychological reasons that you want this done.
Absolutely not. I have never required or wanted any medication. I was brought up to be strong. I was brought up for the truth. I never was brought up with a silver spoon in my mouth, and anything I felt that needed to be investigated, there is a reason. And we must get to the bottom. There is a reason why they're not giving us the truth, too. We're adults, and we deserve to know now, today. And they're hiding it. And so when you hide something or block something, there is something there they don't want you to know. It's, for instance, I want two things. I want to know why we can't see the security, the surveillance tapes where the poor people, I mean our passengers, our loved ones, were boarding their doomed plane for the last time. I want to see the real list of all those that boarded those planes. Let's see if there is any terrorist on those planes. Just simple things, and that's not getting into any security at all. That's just things that we need to heal, okay? And other countries that have had airplane crashes, they do anything and everything. They bring in everything to find the black boxes and the voice recorders. And we have not found them, but we can find pieces of paper where people's passports, supposedly terrorists, it flew out of the fire, and we find it days later. You know, these things look very suspicious. So we need answers. Okay.
All right. And on that note, I'm going to go ahead and get your lawyer, Phil Berg, now and get him to really lay out the case as best he sees it as far as the factual things go. But I'm very glad I had a chance to get you on. I wasn't sure that I was going to be able to talk to you. But
thank you, Philip, for letting me talk.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Good luck.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. We are back on the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Philip Drew, Administrator. And we are now joined by Phil Berg. He is the lawyer representing Ellen Mariani and their racketeering lawsuit against George Bush for allegedly allowing the September 11th attack to happen. Welcome to the show, sir.
My pleasure. Glad to be with you, and hello to everyone in Austin, Texas.
All right. Now, I told you I'm going to start this off by being a bit hard on you. I noticed in surfing around on the Internet that you filed at least a couple of actions against George Bush earlier on in the presidency. You filed the lawsuit pointing out that Bush and Dick Cheney were both residing in the same state and therefore would be forbidden to run as per the Constitution of the United States. And also you filed lawsuits on behalf, apparently, of Al Gore or the voters of Florida against Bush in the election of 2000. And so my question to you is, are you just a partisan Democrat using this lady to get a George Bush or what?
Not at all. We had some petitions, I think, about the 2000 election. There was no suit filed. The suit filed actually was against Dick Cheney. Just mentioning the fact that Dick Cheney and George Bush could not be from the same state in a close election. The electors could not vote for both of them. So I filed a friend of the court brief in Florida, and then I filed an actual action in the state of Texas, which the court unfortunately ruled against us on another case, but it had the same effect on my case, which I really believe was wrong, because what it said was they used the law from 1820 to decide residency. But the issue that your listeners should understand is that was like the beginning of the nonsense coming forth from this administration. When, if everyone recalls what happened, Dick Cheney flew off to Wyoming and registered to vote up there, saying that that's where his home was. But even though he did that for the purposes of the presidential election, at that time he could not be, he could not have gotten a hunting license, fishing license, or voted from Wyoming. So I think that was just a big sham. And it's just an example how Bush and Cheney and the entire administration has just pulled the wool over people's eyes from the beginning. So I thought that that stupid had a lot of validity to it. And well, I am not doing anything for political purposes here. When I lay out the facts to you and give me as many questions as you want on this, it's just absolute positively that Bush and his administration were involved, were complicit in 9/11, in September 11th.
Complicit in it?
Absolutely. Complicit, involved. Without, we have to go on this factor. For September 11, 2001 to have occurred, 116 governmental agencies and fail-safe systems of the United States of America would have had to fail on that particular day for September 11th, the tragedy of September 11th to have occurred.
Now, I heard you say that on MSNBC the other night. I wonder, where do you get that number, 116?
I don't have it right in front of me. I'll get it back to you. We have it from some statistician did it. Someone has checked out the various systems in the United States, and it's just, it was impossible to happen. I can give you, like I mentioned on Scarborough before they cut me off, and I hope you don't cut me off. I think you said you wouldn't. But I mentioned to them, this past week they released a tape from a stewardess on a plane saying how people were stabbed. At the end of that tape, they said 26 minutes later, that plane struck the World Trade Center. Well, that violated every standing operating procedure of our United States military, because a hijacked plane calls for military jets to be scrambled. If military jets are scrambled in the vicinity of New York City, within 10 minutes, they would be there to intercept that plane. Now, maybe you want to say that we never knew a plane would be used against a building in the United States, excuse me, which is absolutely a lie, because since 1995, our government knew that Al-Qaeda had planned to use planes to go into the Sears Tower in Chicago or the World Trade Center in New York, as well as even other buildings. So when that plane was aimed... Go ahead.
Pardon me, Mr. Burke. Slow down here a little bit. We got 40 minutes here, I'm perfectly willing to let you get back into Bojinka and all the stuff from 1995 and all that. But one point at a time here. When you talk about all the fail-safes on the day of September 11th, when the planes were crashing and everybody was wondering, where's the fighter jets, you know, as this is going on? And, you know, there were good questions about that. It's got to be said in the defense of the people at NORAD and whoever that, you know, the way people act in a crisis, for the most part, is to stand there and go, duh, and wait for their boss to tell them what to do, and everybody's waiting to be told what to do by somebody else, and everybody just kind of sits there, and that's like that in all kinds of crises. So it could be said that the reason that fighter jets intercept the average stray plane all the time, and September 11th they were having such trouble, perhaps it's just because it was the enormity of the crisis going on was such that everybody was just kind of sitting there, and nobody really knew what to do. They were accidentally dispatching the fighters from bases that were too far away instead of the nearer bases and that kind of thing. I mean, doesn't that just sound like typical government incompetence and bureaucrats choking on the job rather than, you know, deliberate people placed to make sure that the jets didn't take off in time? You understand what I'm getting at?
No, because if there was incompetence in the federal government, what's the answer for incompetence in our military? It's court-martial. Has anyone been court-martialed? Has anyone been brought to trial and sue in 1/3 years? Not at all. You know, I mean, we have to take a look at it. You're right. In a situation like that, you know, we have to look at the situation and see what's going on, realize the facts and circumstances, okay? And I'll take the time because I'm glad you're going to have me on for the whole time here. We have to look at the enormity of the situation. The enormity of the situation is the fact that let's just take it, what you're saying. Let's take the first plane, because it never happened before. When the first plane hit the World Trade Center, at that point in time, the second plane was missing, correct?
Yes.
Are you with, okay, now, so the second plane, so my point is, my client, who you spoke to, Ellen, her husband was on the second plane. There's no way that second plane should have ever hit the World Trade Center, because that was missing. It did not hit the second World Trade Center until 17 minutes later. So where's the incompetence at that point? I mean, where's the answer on that? It doesn't make sense. You follow? Let's assume for a minute that everyone screwed up on the first planes. We never thought it would happen. We now know there's, at that point, another plane is missing from Boston.
But you are assuming there, aren't you assuming there that the people in charge of sending the fighter planes up were getting that information in a timely manner? Now, I know that obviously some aircraft controllers knew that the second plane had been hijacked and then saw on TV or heard that the Trade Center had already been hit by the first plane, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every military commander with fighter jets under his command for a few hundred miles knew that a second plane had been hijacked, does it?
If it didn't, our country's really in poor shape.
I would say, let me set it up this way for you. Let's give them the total benefit of the doubt here, because they're total government bureaucrats and they're idiots, okay? And let's say that when the first plane hit, everybody went, wow, terrible accident. And that, and never mind, because let's say that, you know, the FAA was not in immediate contact with NORAD and whoever was in charge of dispatching fighter jets. And let's say that they went a whole other 15 minutes until the second plane hit the second tower before they realized, wow, this is definitely terrorism going on here. Now, at that point, I don't give them any more excuses. Okay, that's at straight up at 9:03, right, is when the second plane hit. At that point, I don't give them any more excuses, because I could say maybe there was a breakdown in communications between the first plane and the second plane. By the time the second plane hit, okay, now it's time for every commander to get into action, right?
Correct.
So how much time does he have after the second plane hit? If we're giving them that much grace, how much time do they have to get to the third plane and the fourth plane?
Well, the third plane, I think, doesn't hit till 9:28. I mean, I think that, I'm not sure the exact time at the Pentagon. I think it's around 9:28. So, you know, it's like, how did that happen? You follow me? And at the Pentagon, there are planes at Andrews Air Force Base, right across, you know, I think a few minutes away from Washington. They were not even scrambled. I mean, the whole thing, and meanwhile, let's take a look at it. Andy Card, the chief of staff for President Bush, right after 9:03, leans over to the president in the classroom and tells him the second plane hit. And as the president relates later, he told him that the government was under attack. Correct? And what does he do? He sits there for the next 18 minutes listening to a ghost story.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
give me a break. You know, I mean, what does this make sense? Does it make sense that the President of the United States? Now, I always wondered. I always said to myself, "Gee," until I got into this thing further and studied it further. I said, "Well, the President, you know, does he control his life, or does the Vice President control his life? No, the Secret Service controls his life." And I said, why didn't the Secret Service just pick him up and get him out of that room? Well, sure enough, in some documents I have now received, the Vice President, it's reported, was picked up by Secret Service agents, literally picked up, taken out of his office in the White House complex, taken to a secret tunnel and also a secret location for his protection. But meanwhile, the President of the United States, where everyone in the world knew he was because there was a photo op in this classroom, is allowed to remain in a classroom and sits there for 18 more minutes. Now, that doesn't even make sense unless people are told to leave him alone. I mean, when you put all the facts, the legitimate facts together, you have to realize that something is wrong more than incompetence. You really do. And see, I'm not even going into at this point the details which are set forth in my amended complaint. I have on my amended complaint 100 instances where the government knew about the comings of September 11th before September 11th. And with all that foreknowledge, nothing was done. you have to realize, for instance...
Why don't you go through some of that for us here?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Thank you. John Ashcroft, the Attorney General of the United States, he was, in July of 2001, he stopped flying commercial aircraft, you know, and he started taking military charters. On September 10th, 2001, many people with connections to our federal government were told not to fly on September 11th. Including, I have one name, there's many others, but Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco was told not to fly on that date. So when you take those factors, you know, then how come these people were told, like my client's husband was not told not to fly on that day. My client, Ellen Mariani, she flew that day. I think she probably told you the story how she and her husband took two separate planes that day from Boston's Logan Airport.
To get to their daughter's wedding.
Correct. So she related that to you, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
Now, she wasn't forewarned. She wasn't told not to fly on September 11th. The warnings, the ongoing fact that the 9/11 Commission has been stonewalled, and that's very important because for your listeners, there's an item called Presidential Daily Briefings. Well, Presidential Daily Briefings have not been released. And they're significant because people around the world are telling us that in this Presidential Daily Briefings, there were warnings to our president. There were warnings to our government that that September 11 was going to happen. But the 9/11 Commission, and I don't need to be jumping now, I'll try to straighten out where I am, but the 9/11 Commission was fought by the White House to be even formulated to investigate 9/11. Since it's been formulated, it's been stonewalled. It's been completely stonewalled.
Well, it's in the news this week that they want an extension and that they're not going to get it.
Right. Can you believe that? That the President of the United States plans to not give the Commission an extension of time. Now, is that unbelievable? I mean...
Well, I guess he would say that it's wasting valuable intelligence resources during wartime.
I guess he might say that. Yeah, he is wasting time during wartime. A war that should not have been. Every day we're losing another man, another woman. They're not even telling us how many people are injured. They're not telling us how many people have lost their legs, their eyes, their arms. They're not telling us that fact. It's unbelievable. Let's look at the 9/11 Commission for a minute. On the 9/11 Commission, there was a 10-member commission. It now turns out that the president had made a deal. And the deal he made was to have two members of the 9/11 Commission given special access, given access to some of the presidential daily briefings. And I think they even did, but only some of them. And they were allowed to make notes of some of the presidential daily briefings. But they had to leave the notes in the White House. Now, give me a break. Now it turns out, though, that the two individuals that they gave permission to have the access to the presidential daily briefings, it turns out those two individuals were on the, one of them was on the Bush team, and the other one had some other connection from Bush from the very beginning, which I would then state to you is what's called a little conflict of interest. Now, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, the September 11, what's really called the 9/11 Commission, is former Republican Governor Keene of New Jersey. Now, he made a bold statement about a month and a half ago, that 9/11 was preventable based upon the information and facts that he had up until that time.
Well, now, it's a whole other thing to say that they let it happen. I mean, he surely wasn't saying that. He was saying, wow, if only 2 plus 2 could have been put together to equal 4, it could have been stopped. But not that anyone was deliberately stopping them from stopping it.
Well, but they haven't finished. But just take a look at it. The chairman of the commission says, in his opinion, 9/11 was preventable. And they're not done investigating. They're not done interviewing the people. They haven't gotten to a number of high-level individuals. Take a person like Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice now states that she will not give testimony under oath. I mean, give me a break. I mean, what are we talking about here? See, we're talking about the president is hiding under the guise of national security. But the biggest national security failure is everything around his administration. Now for the public to understand this better, we have to look back in years gone by. One factor which has now been general knowledge for a while is that President Roosevelt knew about, according to history now, according to facts that have been released, President Roosevelt knew about Pearl Harbor 2 weeks before Pearl Harbor occurred, but he wanted to get us, the United States of America, into World War II. Now, we weren't there with the reasoning. We don't know all the facts and figures. But we're obviously glad that we got into World War II. It's unfortunate how many people, men and women, we lost in battle. But it's a shame that we lost all those people at Pearl Harbor, the men and women, the ships, the planes, everything that occurred there. But to bring it up to more something more significant, more apropos to that people can understand, and I have the documents to support it, and I'll be glad to, I don't think it's posted on my site yet, but I'm going to post it up on our website, if I can mention our site, www.911, the number is 911, then spelled out for, F-O-R, the, T-H-A, truth, T-R-U-T-H.com. I have a document from 1962. It's called Operation Northwood. This is frightening when you read this. Operation Northwood is a document recently declassified by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the United States of America, with plans to cause death and destruction to American lives, American property, and blame it on Cuba to go to war with Cuba. And when the American public can realize that that occurred, and it didn't happen because President John F. Kennedy stopped it. President Kennedy said, we're not going to go through with that. When people realize that our government can plan to kill Americans, to blame it on Cuba, they can realize that the involvement and the enormity of September 11th is more than meets the eye. And see, the thing that bothers us the most and my client, if President Bush and his administration would set forth all the facts and figures about September 11th, if he would put forth all this information, open up all the presidential daily briefings, open up all the intelligence records, open up all the FAA documents, all the NORAD records, everything. And if we're wrong, we'll withdraw gladly our lawsuit. But we have filed, as you mentioned, is a RICO lawsuit. It's called Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act. It was enacted by our United States Congress in the 1960s. To go after the mafia, to go after the mob. And it's our strong position, and I know it's hard for some of your listeners to understand, but we believe there's a mob in our White House. Now, recently, I think last year or 2 years ago, the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, was removed from office based on a RICO action. The evidence in this case, when presented, will be so overwhelming that President Bush not only should be out of office based on our civil action, but criminal charges should be brought against him and other members of his administration. As a matter of fact, when Treasury Secretary O'Neill recently made his statement about 2 weeks ago on the book that he wrote before they tried to get him to back off on a little of this information, what happened was that after Treasury Secretary O'Neill came forth with the statements, our United States Congress, if they had any guts, which they don't, they should start impeachment proceedings against President Bush. But they don't. But remember, you know, because it's Republican control, but remember they spent $50 million to try to impeach and did impeach Bill Clinton over whether he had sex in the White House or not. Sex in the White House does not compare.
Actually, I think the charges were committing perjury in front of a federal grand jury.
Okay, maybe. Okay, I guess you are right. Maybe it's charged because he lied.
It was a felony. It was a felony. The charge wasn't getting a blowjob. The charge was lying in front of a federal grand jury.
And that is a felony. But I submit to you that the murdering of 3,000 people is a lot more vicious than lying before a lie by the president. Go ahead.
The problem here is that there's not a judge in America that's going to let this case come to trial. I mean, the last I saw that, as far as, and you can update me if I don't know, but the last I saw, the Bush administration had filed a motion to dismiss, and you guys had filed something saying, no, don't dismiss it, and maybe you'll make it through this round. But, I mean, do you really believe, I mean, just in a matter of practical sense, that this could... is ever even going to come to trial? They're not going to let you guys have discovery. I mean, if they're blocking the 911 commission, they call it, if they're blocking that, they're not going to let you have your documents.
Isn't that frightening what you just said?
Well, yeah.
It's frightening. I mean, let's stop.
But I mean, well, hang on a second, though. Okay. I mean, in a practical sense, I mean, are you just wasting this lady's money? Because you know they're not going to... I mean, you're right that it's scary and all that, and I'll let you make your point about how scary it is that that's even, you know, the accepted fact. But that is the fact. They're not going to let this go anywhere. So I kind of wonder whether maybe y'all's money could be better spent doing something else rather than, you know, making a losing case, and then the government's just going to say, see, there was nothing to that. You know, that case was dismissed, and make it even stronger for them, you know?
Well, hopefully you and everyone else will eat their words that this case will never get to trial for this reason. That if this case doesn't come to trial, if this fact of this case are not heard, then we are real bad shape in this country if a judicial system will fall and not allow a case that has merit. In this case, now let me explain one thing. When we filed our lawsuit, we were trying to file it on September 11, 2003, just for tokenism, to put the government on notice that we would come forth and file our action. What happened was, and I don't know if intentional or not, our messenger took us down to the courthouse and the guard didn't open the door, so it actually got filed at 12:03 a.m. on September 12th, which was one of the reasons why they filed the motion to dismiss. However, our notice action basically just dealt with negligence, and we had planned all along to file our amended complaint. Our amended complaint is under RICO. RICO, there's no official statute there, but by case law, it's 4 to 5 years. So we're well within the statute of limitations. If they're going to hide under the guise of national security, I assure you that we're going to do everything to bring this to attention. The shame of this is that while Ellen Mariani and myself are very much against child molestation and rape, that the big stories of the day are Kobe Bryant and Michael Jackson. That when those cases go into the courtroom, you have 40, 50, 100 satellite trucks and news people walking around to try to cover that story. This story, this administration has done more to take away individual rights than any other administration in the 200 years of this country. Now, let me go on that for 1 second. I'll answer any questions you want. Since September 11th occurred, they created the Stabilization Act on about September 20th, which included the fund which Ellen Mariani has declined to take. And it's very sad. A lot of people are forced into the fund. I'll get into that if you'd like. But if they take money from the fund, they are therefore then prevented from filing any lawsuit, from taking any action against the airline, the port authorities, or the government. Basically, as Ellen Mariani has called it, she calls it the hush fund, because this is for the first time in history. It didn't happen in Oklahoma City. It never happened in any other war, or any other attack. For the first time in history, Kenneth Feinberg, one individual, was appointed to be able to meet with people and make his own determination. And whatever amount of money that he made, the money that he designates comes with a direct check from the United States Treasury. This has never happened before. And this happened within 2 weeks of September 11th. I mean, why did it happen so quick? I mean, if you really look at even the cover-up and the events that have occurred after September 11th, you have to really raise your eyebrows and say, what is going on? And that's all we're saying to the American public. It's about time you open up your eyes. But aside from the Stabilization Act, they created and passed Patriot 1, now Patriot 2. Some of the provisions, we are very thankful for, have been knocked unconstitutional by the courts. So that's why we still have faith that our court system will work and will survive with this, with our case. And since then, what happened? About a month and a half ago, they announced that people see the problem. People said, well, it doesn't directly affect me. About a month and a half ago, they announced that cameras and fingerprints, photos of people and fingerprints will be taken of people coming into our country from certain countries. Now, notice they never announced that system until they put it in. I'd love to know who got the contract for that equipment for all around the world. I'm sure it's one of Bush's buddies, and I'm sure it's related to a Halliburton or some other company that Bush or Cheney's involved in. But that's not important because that's only money. But now what did the government say? 2 weeks ago they announced that by this summer they're going to color code every individual in our country who plans to fly on planes. That means your listeners, if they get color coded red for some reason, they will not be able to fly on an aircraft anymore. This is Big Brother. This administration is taking away more rights of individuals under the guise of national security. The only problem we have in national security is the bunch sitting in that White House. These color codes and the threats and things, you know, I don't buy into it. I really don't, because the facts indicate that the Bush administration was intricately involved with September 11th, and so I'm convinced otherwise.
All right, and, you know, I think I really want to get into some more of the kind of history behind who knew what and for how long. You brought up Bojinka there at the beginning about, in 1995, the threats to crash planes. And also, I know there were different FBI agents from around the country that were coming forward after September 11th saying that they had been trying to do their best but weren't allowed to and that kind of thing. You know, in fact, I'll even refer to that MSNBC thing that I saw you on the other night. The way the question was put to Michael Isikoff from Newsweek was kind of generally, and he restated the question for himself before he answered it, and the way he restated the question was, look, did the government know that these men were going to hijack these four planes and crash them into these targets on September 11th? Of course not. And, you know, that's a pretty specific kind of way of putting it. And I wonder whether you think they really didn't know in that much detail, or just that they knew something was coming and they were kind of trying to make sure that it was allowed to happen. But, I mean, you seem to think, you know, when you talked about Bush being deliberately left in the classroom and that kind of thing, you seem to think that they knew exactly what was going to happen and when and everything. Is that right?
Absolutely. I'll tell you why. Let's just look at some of the facts. You mentioned, and you're well-versed on this, and I'm glad, and I wish you were handling that TV show the other night because you would have let me air the other topic. The FBI agent, an FBI agent in Minneapolis, wanted to do an investigation on Sally, and he was stopped on three different occasions. Now, let's think for a minute. Was he stopped by Al-Qaeda? No. Was he stopped by Saddam Hussein? No. Who stopped him? Bush. Bush and the administration stopped the further investigation. Then we go down to the FBI in Phoenix, Arizona. They wanted to do a investigation. They were involved in, they had information on, I think it's Muhammad Atta. They wanted to do an investigation of Muhammad Atta. Now, that was stopped. Now, again, who stopped it? Did Saddam Hussein stop it? No. Did Al-Qaeda stop it? No. Who stopped it? Bush stopped it. This was stopped. Now, we're talking about in March and April and May of 2001. I mean, when you put let me say this. The problem you have right now, you have the 9/11 Commission asking questions. For instance, the other day they asked questions about how did these 19 hijackers get into the country. They're talking about their visas and things to that effect. But the issue is they're not dealing with the real facts. The real facts are, supposedly, and I haven't had the money yet to check it out, but supposedly these five of these 19 hijackers, supposedly five or even seven, but definitely five, the latest information I have, are alive and well flying planes in Saudi Arabia right now. Now, shouldn't money be taken by this commission to go over and find that fact out or not? I think it should be. Now, let me ask one other thing. We supposedly knew nothing about the events of September 11th. Yet within 12 hours, I don't know the exact timing, within 24, but I've been told even within 12 hours of the horrific planes crashing into these buildings, flashed on our television screens were the pictures of these 19 hijackers as well as their names. Now, how did this occur? How did we have this information within 12 or 24 hours after if we knew nothing about that this was going to happen? See, you have to just logically look at all this. Another big factor here is Congress has investigated the September 11th events. They issued a report. President Bush has taken 26 pages of that, and he said for national security, no one can see them, and he blacked them out.
Okay, now let me stop you right there, because this ties together what you said about the FBI agents being stopped by Bush and the Saudi Arabia thing. Now, I interviewed Greg Palast from BBC Newsnight, and he said that he had talked to FBI and CIA agents that had complained that there was pressure on them to at least slow down, if not stop altogether, their investigations of Al-Qaeda and the Saudi financing of Al-Qaeda and that kind of thing. But Greg Palast was very careful to distinguish that he did not believe that Bush had set this up to deliberately allow it to happen. He thought it was simply a matter of Bush was protecting his oil buddies. And these were the guys who'd been investing in his company when he was a kid and that kind of thing. And that he wanted to take the pressure off of them. And that the Saudis were not paying Al-Qaeda to get them to attack us. The Saudis were paying them as protection money to keep them from, to keep Al-Qaeda from attacking themselves. And that Bush had put, like you say, had put pressure on these agents to back off their investigations. But not so that the attack could happen, just because he's a corrupt oil man. And do you make that distinction there or not?
Well, see, the thing is, because you have to be very careful how you discuss this. And Greg Palast, I know, and I think I'm going to be with him next month. I believe we're going to be together out in Los Angeles at a certain event. Because we are pushing forth with this. Greg is a good investigative reporter. And what he's doing is he's careful to in connecting the dots. And he wants to be very careful because he is very credible and he has come up with very excellent information even regarding the elections. He did a big investigation of the stolen elections of 2000, which didn't get any further because of our court system. And you're right, we could have some problems with the court system, but we're going to fight on. But the point is that when you take all the facts, and the 9/11 Commission has to ask other questions. Like, they're not asking the right questions for certain reasons. Like I said, two members of that commission are involved with Bush very tightly. Max Cleland, I'm sure your listeners know Max Cleland, he was the most outspoken person on the 9/11 commission. What happened? They must have had something on him because he's no longer on the commission. He's now been promoted upstairs to the Import-Export Bank. He's a board member of it. I mean, people have to look and say, how did this happen and why? I'm sure they had something on him from his voting record or something, or just his financial situation needed it, and they gave him that boost. But he's no longer on that commission. Doesn't that raise some questions? I mean, when you look at all the facts. But let's go back. Aside from that, there's a presidential daily briefing. I think it's I'm not sitting from my desk. I think it's August 9th, which won't be released, because in that one, or around that time, on that particular occasion, there's supposedly a notification from a foreign government of the attacks that were going to take place with planes flying into buildings. You know, we don't know the exact details of it because we only have from what's overseas. But a couple of national magazines, very reliable magazines, have related the fact that with all the facts that the government had had on September 11th, they knew it was going to occur. Now, let's say, go along with the statement you made. Supposing they didn't know it was going to happen on September 11th. But with all the foreknowledge that they had, and this becomes more than negligence and more than incompetence, this becomes gross negligence, this becomes criminally liable. The moment that plane was hijacked at 8:20, you know, I mean, with foreknowledge that planes might be used, then the FAA should have known everything, and NORAD should have known everything. The moment that stewardess was able to make a call to her call center saying the plane was hijacked and people were stabbed, then people, I'm sorry, should be brought to justice for total incompetence, if not criminality, for the fact that if that word wasn't passed on. But I believe those questions haven't been asked by the 9/11 Commission, and that's frightening. And I believe the reason those questions haven't been answered is for the fact that if you don't ask questions sometimes, like in court, I'm an attorney, and the rule of thumb is you don't ask a question that you don't know the answer of. Or on the other hand, you don't ask a question that you do know the answer of, but you don't like the answer. So it's my real belief that certain questions, for instance, let me shift just so your listeners can understand. There's been a leak several months ago of the wife of a former ambassador who turns out to be a CIA agent, and her name was leaked. Now, has that been released yet of who leaked that information? No.
No, there's a grand jury on it right now, I think.
Well, the grand jury, I assure you we'll get the information. We'll probably get the information the day after Election Day in November, because it's just a delay tactic going on. If the president really wanted to know who released her name, he would have sent an email, a fax, a phone call, memos to every member of the White House staff. Now, we realize that the White House staff is probably 3,000 people or 4,000 people in different buildings. But if the president really wanted to know, see, I believe he knows, but if he really wanted to know officially, he would have issued this email, fax, phone call to everyone on the White House staff and saying, by tomorrow at 12 noon, I want to know who leaked this information. He hasn't done it because he doesn't want to know. If he doesn't know personally, he doesn't want that information released.
That's a very good example.
Okay, now let me give you another example of how this administration is constantly lying here. The constant lies go on with the fact that the war in Iraq, you know, there was constant lies, continual lies about weapons of mass destruction. Not only the weapons of mass destruction, but that the weapons of mass destruction were about to be used on us, on the United States of America, on our citizens. That's the only reason, for the first time in history, we went to war, preemptive strike. You know how frightened, you realize what we did, a preemptive strike? That's like Japan did to us. By doing a preemptive strike, we have now opened up our wounds, we've opened up our whole world, our country, to the possibility of another country doing a preemptive strike on us, thinking that maybe, well, someone in the White House someday, or some general might push the button, because we have weapons of mass destruction. And that's frightening what our government did. And now, they're like backstepping, and they're sidestepping, and they're blaming, and they're saying, well, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. We all agree Saddam Hussein's a bad guy. He should have been taken out 13 years ago when his father was in there, but they didn't. But then you have to even go back, and we're phonies here, because who armed Saddam Hussein? Who gave him all his money? Who gave him his weapons? We did, because we wanted him, we put him into power to fight Iran. I mean, but now he's a bad guy. So let him be a bad guy, and we should have taken him out. But we just lost another, I think, three military personnel were killed today.
I'm sorry, Mr. Berg,
yes,
there's a lot of noise in the background there. Are you driving down the freeway or something?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yeah, try to keep that window rolled up or something, because we're getting a lot of noise here.
Okay, let me try to put a phone
right
up.
We only got about 3 minutes here, so why don't we go ahead and wrap it up and do the closing comments. And I agree with you about the Iraq war, by the way. I guess my problem here is that, or I guess your problem here is that you got lots of clues, but you really need the discovery process in order to get at what you really want to prove your case.
Well, see, the thing is, though, the excellent part is a lot of the discovery, in a way, you're right. We do need the discovery from the court system, and we're going to get it. We're right now preparing motions to take deposition of Saddam Hussein to see what he knows or doesn't know or what contacts he's had with Osama bin Laden. We're also preparing a deposition notice to take the deposition of Moussaoui to find out, you know, if he was or was not the 20th hijacker. We're also preparing a motion to file, and we're going to file these, 1, 2, 3. We're going to make the court rule on these motions to bring it to the public's attention. We're going to file a motion to take the deposition of George W. Bush. And that will be allowed now under the decision of, if you remember, Paula Jones versus Clinton, which allowed the deposition of the president on a situation that occurred while he wasn't even president. And these are very important. We're going to do it. We're going to go after it. We hope the public gets behind us. We ask them. We appreciate you putting us on the air. We hope they go to our website, www.911forthetruth.com. Join on us. Sign our petition. Spread the word to their friends. Ask any questions. We'll be glad to come back on your show. I'll answer the tough questions because they have to be answered. But I can set forth numerous questions like, you know, why hasn't the flight manifest been released, the official list of people on the planes? Why, where are the black boxes from the planes that hit the World Trade Center? There's so many unanswered legitimate questions that really have to be answered and must be answered. And we can't wait 40 years and find out, like we're now finding out, further things on the Kennedy assassination and World War II. But we really appreciate it. I'll be here to answer any questions anytime. And I really thank and appreciate you and all your listeners in Austin, Texas.
Great. Thank you. I sure appreciate you coming on the show myself.
And next time I'll be on a landline, and I apologize to your listeners if they heard a little breakup. But I'm on the way to another commitment this week on the events of September 11th.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.